Hello and welcome to the Blockade Runner podcast number 222. My name is John. Joining me is Ryan and his pin collection. I see back there, Ryan. I never noticed that before.
Well, this is going to, the area behind me is going to be kind of descending further into chaos over the course of the next month. We are in the process of house hunting, and we need to get our condo ready to show to be sold. So we are slowly moving things into storage, a storage unit. So stuff is just moving and disappearing. And it's going to get pretty wild in the next few weeks.
Well, that sounds like exciting times. Exciting times for sure. Speaking of which, we are here, Ryan, to talk about some of the exciting things that we saw at Star Wars Celebration that we haven't been able to talk about on the show yet. So previous episode was about Obi-Wan Kenobi parts 1-3. So we covered that, but there's so much stuff that we saw at Celebration that we want to talk about on the show. So we're going today to look at the live action announcements and content and trailers and things like that. And then we'll come back soon with future episodes about publishing and video games and animation and other areas of Star Wars that we learned about at Celebration. So today, live action focus, we're going to talk about the Andor trailer. We're going to talk about Skeleton Crew, a new show announced that we previously knew as Grammar Rodeo, I think, right? Was that what it was? Grammar Rodeo?
Yep. Based on the Simpsons episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And titled after the Simpsons episode. And then
it's not following the plot of that Simpsons episode in full. It's not a Star Wars take on that. Unless it's not an adaptation.
Yeah, right. And then we're also going to talk about Ahsoka and Mandalorian season 3, because we went to the Mando panel and learned quite a bit about those shows. So yeah, lots to talk about. So why don't we just jump right into Cassian Andor? Sound good?
Hey, so nice to be here.
How does it feel to revisit this character?
It feels amazing. I mean, today everything feels amazing. Cassian Andor. I love what he represents in the universe of Star Wars. This is the story about the people. And you know, the beauty of this show is that there's no way they'll kill me.
Not in this show.
No.
This is the show that you were most excited about, I think, going into the live action panel, right? Isn't this the show that you wanted to know the most about or wanted to know about most, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was this and The Acolyte, and we didn't get anything about The Acolyte. That's a little further off. But I think, like, coming out of that Vanity Fair article, which was kind of a tease for what we are going to be seeing at Celebration, I think, like, Acolyte and Andor were the most interesting and compelling to me, and the ones we knew the least about. So yeah, it was, I was and wasn't surprised that an Andor trailer dropped. I think it, like, could have gone either way, kind of, but it is getting, you know, they're pretty deep in filming, and production, so it kind of makes sense. We got one, and I think it, fully delivered as a tone piece, I would say, as a teaser, because it really didn't give us, like, the plot or the stakes or the too much information about characters or anything, but it showed us a lot of imagery and kind of gave us the vibe of the show, which is really cool and really exciting.
Ah. out of themselves. So fat and satisfied. They're everywhere. They're watching me now.
Soon enough, these days will end. There will be no rules going forward.
People are standing up. That's what a reckoning sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. And this teaser, like I think a lot of teasers and Star Wars teasers specifically, it's kind of anchored by just a few lines of dialogue that are more like narration than they are like actual, you know, scenes that we're seeing play out in front of us. So there's commentary from a few different characters. So I went through and did a couple of bullet points. I'm sure we'll talk about other things that I don't have kind of listed here. But there's only four or five lines that are spoken, in the trailer. So I pulled those out and I think they are really kind of like the source of, they are what give us an idea of like what the show is focused on and what the show cares about and that kind of thing. So, I wanted to pull those out. The first one is from Cassian Andor, who says they're so proud of themselves, so fat and satisfied. And, of course, as those lines are playing, we're seeing footage of, Imperial, officers and just seeing, footage of the Empire, itself. And that's like a minute into the trailer. So there's quite a bit before that, but just in terms of like the first line of the trailer, that's like that's the first line is, they're so satisfied with themselves. Or they're so proud of themselves, so fat and satisfied. And we do see some footage of, the Empire and some Imperial officers and that kind of thing. Hearing Diego Luna and Tony Gilroy and the other, creatives talk about the show at the panel, having read the Vanity Fair article, that all sort of tracks with what we know the show is about, which is rebellion, people like Cassian Andor kind of, stepping up and challenging the Empire. And it's about the, colonialism and domination of, the little people by the Empire, I suppose you'd say. Right. So, that all tracks, with what we know about the show so far. And before that line, like I said, comes in like a minute into the trailer. Before that line, we get the opposite of that. So, that's the first line Cassian talking about the Empire. But before that, we see this, it is kind of a lengthy, it's not a scene, but a collection of moments, all seemingly from the same kind of place of this. I'm assuming this is Cassian's like home planet. Because from reading that Vanity Fair article, we learned from Tony Gilroy that it's like going to, depict, the planet that he's from, which is then destroyed or taken over by the Empire. And then there'll be an adopted homeworld that Cassian, ends up living at. So I'm assuming that this opening footage with the guy hitting the gong and all that stuff, I'm assuming this is Cassian's home planet. Is that how you interpret that as well?
I haven't really thought about it. Seems like, it could be, or it could just be like a, rebel cell somewhere. I guess this is predating Cassian joining the rebellion. Uh-huh. But it would seem that, the people here, whether it's his planet or not, are like scared of the Empire, in defiance of the Empire. I guess either way, whether they're rebels or whether they're just people, they're no no friends to the Empire.
Mm. Yeah, at about the 30-second mark, there's a shot of a young man, maybe 10 or 12 years old, something like that, who is looking up at this, I don't know what it is actually, what kind of ship that is, that seems to be kind of like crashing down on their planet. But that's like one of the opening, though the trailer opens with the guy hitting the gong type thing. And then after that, there's a shot of some kind of shuttle or I don't know. I don't know. I'm sure like Star Wars Explained could tell me what it is there, but it's exploding and crashing into the planet. And then at the 30-second mark, there's a shot of a young boy in a, like a yellowy kind of shirt looking up. And I kind of like when I saw that, I thought, oh, that's young Cassian probably. Which, I mean, you know, obviously maybe it isn't, but they really focus in on this young person looking up this face. There's a couple other characters in the background that have some yellow, but like he's like really in the foreground and, you know, his clothing is much more colorful than the people around him and everything. So it's just really emphasizing this one, you know, kind of child in the shot. So I'm thinking that's Cassian.
Cool. Yeah, maybe. It could be like kind of what they did with Din in Mando, where they give us, you know, some flashbacks to like his childhood and like what kind of informed who he becomes. Or maybe it's like a sequential and we just start with him as a kid for like, you know, some amount of time. I would assume like flashbacks is generally how you tell that those kind of stories these days. And Star Wars does flashbacks now. So that's if that is the case and we are seeing him as a young man, that makes sense.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they tackle that. But you know, I think like for sure we're going to get young Cassian, but like as you said, it's a question of in what order and what format and that kind of thing. So, okay. Well, did you have any other thoughts on the gong guy?
Love him.
Okay.
Like, I mean, I'm a huge fan of like that, I guess the cold open, to the trailer, of like, yeah. Cause it's just a cool shot. Cause it's just like, a locked camera and, there's just nothing there. And then like this dude slowly comes into frame and then like bangs a gong. It's a nice change from a lot of trailers out there. It's a little bit classy. I like it. Some kind of like A24 vibes happening there.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. It's interesting because all the shots that follow of the people in the village and stuff, it seems like they're really rushing and hurried and like, you know, like we got to cover everything up before the Empire gets here, you know, to like kind of hide. Because I do assume, you know, that those villagers and those people are, you know, resisting in some way against the Empire. And so like they have to cover their tracks or hide all those things, is the impression I get from that footage that follows. But the gong guy, it almost seems like ceremonial what he's doing. You know what I mean? He really takes his time, like pulling those mallets or whatever they are, hammers, like down from the wall. And he kind of, I don't know. It's interesting. He doesn't seem like all rushed and chaotic, like, all the villagers and things do, but, I don't know. Interesting choice in terms of how that's, you know, being depicted. And I guess that actor and just the kinetic element of it, you know what I mean? It's pretty, it's pretty like he's calm and almost like ceremonial, but then yeah, all the footage that follows, they're pretty rushed. So curious to see, you know, how it plays out. But as you said, definitely a striking kind of opening, right? And I'm sure that's what they were intending. Yeah. So then we, like I said, we get some footage of, the Empire. And then the next line of dialogue that we get is from Mon Mothma, who says, they're everywhere. They're watching me now. And that's accompanied by footage of her sort of like at, I don't know, kind of senatorial gatherings or, you know, ceremonial things, official business, you know what I mean? Because of course Mon Mothma is a senator. Mm-hmm. There's one scene where she's at some kind of party, like wearing a dress, but, you know, and her face goes from a smile to like a look of concern in that shot. So, yeah, definitely is sort of like the subterfuge kind of part of the show, that I'm expecting the espionage component of it. You know what I mean? I think we're seeing a little bit of that there with the Mon Mothma stuff.
Yeah. I think the idea of, you know, an established great character like Mon Mothma, who, like, you know, we know her, we know like a lot of her story, but like we really haven't seen her like in action, I guess, too much. I think having you know, a story of, you know, someone like her, or, you know, Bail Organa, whoever, like, navigating the Senate under imperial reign is really interesting to me. And I think, like, you know, the politics side of Star Wars, like, has always been there. And like the Senate, you know, was there in A New Hope, and then it was dissolved in A New Hope. And it's just like a one-off line, but it was something that, like, you know, was always on George's mind. And then, you know, there's a lot, we get a lot more of like the Senate and stuff in the prequels. And then, you know, like a little bit of like the governing system in like Force Awakens. But like it's never like, aside from, I guess it is a, like, there's votes in the prequels and like a lot of discussion about it, but like we don't really get to see much of the day-to-day and the you know, how the senators interact with each other, and especially the ones who are like really opposed to the regime. And, you know, I think this is the show to do that in, and to like just let, like, put that out there and like let it, you know, let those stories play out, let it breathe. And which, you know, you can't, they were never really able to do in the films, because there's just so much happening in the films. And, you know, even like the tiny bits of like the Galactic Senate, which is like hugely important to the prequels, like people are like, all this about blockades and embargoes and stuff, I hate the prequels, I can't stand this stuff, all the politics. And, you know, like, people just didn't have an appetite for that stuff in the films, which is, I think, you know, probably informed the, like, hey, there's Hosnian Prime. Oh, that's where all the senators are. It's blown up now. Like, in Force Awakens, like, that's all we're going to talk about, like, the government here. But I think, like, this is probably the show to explore it, because, like, I mean, the people who aren't interested in this stuff, like, aren't going to be tuning into this show. And so, yeah, like, I mean, I hope they kind of go all in on that.
Yeah. I think so. I think they can do that. But there's going to be an element, or it seems like anyways, there's going to be an element of tension and danger there. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I think the political is going to be more palatable for a lot of people when it's not just like, when we see Mon Mothma, at least in the trailer, like, this is the impression I'm getting, when we see her in these political situations and scenarios, we know that, like, she's constantly at the risk of being exposed, you know what I mean? Like, and so there's this danger component of it. So I don't know at this point, like, how much the creators or the creatives behind The Americans are involved in this show anymore. But, you know, that was at least a place, a starting point, it seems like, you know, for the show.
Some of the writers still, I think.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, but like we're seeing with Obi-Wan Kenobi, like the writer's situation is, it's always a little bit unclear. Well, not always, but I guess it can be a little bit unclear because like if you watch an episode of Kenobi, they'll list writers, like they list Stuart Beatty, I think is his name. But I don't think he wrote anything for the show. You know, I think he wrote like a draft of the movie like 5 years ago, but because they're using ideas, you know what I'm saying? Like his name is still on like scripts and stories and things like that. So,
yeah, true.
So whether or not, like, you know, how involved these writers are still, if they are, if they aren't, I know Tony Gilroy, it seems like, is the main driving force behind the show, but you know, I'm sure we'll learn more about that going forward. But if they're still involved or if they're not still involved or whatever, like point is like that was definitely, I think, the direction the show was going in, and part of the genesis of doing the show is to kind of have a political thriller sort of, you know, like mm-hmm. The Americans. So, yeah, I think we can hopefully look forward to that, or at least that being a component of this show, which will make it pretty, you know, pretty different from other Star Wars stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there is like some inherent tension of like being a participating part of a like fascist government while also, you know, in the shadows working against it. And like, I think, I mean, we know Mon Mothma's story, like we know that you know, she's fine until the, like through the OT. But you know, it's the same thing, like with like Obi-Wan, like we know how those characters, how their stories play out, but it can still be really tense and like just compelling television regardless, even if we already know the fate. So yeah, I'm really hoping they lean into that stuff. Because I think it has, and it's something that's always been there in Star Wars, but hasn't been fully explored.
So after that, we get Stellan Skarsgård and some dialogue from him. Now, the captions on the YouTube trailer, you know, credit these lines to a character named Luthen, Luthen. And I feel like I've seen that name before, so I probably had read that somewhere that was the name of the character he's playing. But yeah, so I think that's Stellan Skarsgård's character. Looks like obviously somebody, you know, working in the rebellion, probably of some significance, but also, you know, not like sneakily hobnobbing at Imperial parties like Mon Mothma, but more like on the ground, you know what I mean? Kind of in the thick of it kind of thing. It looks a little on the grizzled side, I would say. And, that is supported by the lines that, he utters for the trailer here, which are soon enough, these days will end. There will be no rules going forward. Which like soon enough, these days will end, I think is, you know, that's the kind of line I would expect like a rebellion kind of, you know, higher up or whatever to say like inspirational stuff, like we're going to put an end to the empire or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, there will be no rules going forward is an interesting thing for him to say. It kind of gives me Saw Gerrera vibes, I would say, you know, a little bit anarchy type, you know, maybe loose cannon kind of vibes from him. What do you think? No,
I it could be. He's yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's interesting. Like I hadn't really like read into that line, but I wonder if it's like if he's like proposing like a you know, a new system of anarchy, or if he's like, you know, pretty soon like we're going to be out in the open, we're not going to have to hide, we're going to use guerrilla warfare tactics.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, you know, a big you know, that was A New Hope. That's what, you know, George talked about being, you know, not referencing like the war in Vietnam and the.
Yeah, I could see that there'll be no rules going forward because like in terms of this war, things are going to get dirty, you know, or things are going to get mm-hmm. like hairy. Things are going to get. Yeah, brutal or whatever. So there's not going to be any rules. It's just going to be, yeah, total violence or whatever, I guess. I don't know. I could see it being something along those lines for sure. Yeah. He looks like he's scouting something. He's like standing up on a hill or something and using his binocs, as we like to call them, looking out at some kind of, I don't know, it looks like an Imperial base or a refinery or something like that. So we'll see. But, you know, obviously a well-known actor, a good actor. So looking forward to seeing more from him in the show, of course. Then there's this like this shot. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's, you know, something recognizable to people who are a little more knowledgeable about the detailed side of things. But there's this shot of at about the 1 minute and 16 second mark, there's a shot of four, at least on screen, four kind of like, they almost look like Star Wars aircraft carriers or something, in the ocean. And they're like in the shape of like a, I don't know what, how do you define that shape? Like a
Dagon?
Is it? Yeah. Are there eight sides? Yeah. Maybe that's what it is. Yeah. But it does look like some kind of, I don't know if it's a stationary base or if it's like a, like an aircraft carrier type thing, but that's sort of what it looks like. And, you know, has a very Imperial, like, you know, original trilogy era, like Imperial, really like Rogue One or, you know, I guess that is original trilogy era, but it has that look, in terms of the architecture or design of it. But,
yeah,
but a new thing, as far as I know, I've never seen these before.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure they're from like, you know, in a West End Games RPG book from, you know, 1989 or something. But right. I've certainly never seen them before. Definitely not seen them in live action.
So then there's, well, a couple things, I guess, like leading up to this. There's a shot earlier in the trailer of a room, like an all white room. And there's a group of people working in that room. It's about the 33 second mark. And they have like these orange stripes down one arm. Do you know what I'm talking about? Do you remember that shot?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's like a science lab or something.
Yeah. Who are these people? I'm really curious about this. Like, I don't know who these guys are. It's a super like uniform. And it kind of gave me like Galen Erso, like those scientists sort of vibes or whatever. I also feel like they seem like they look like they're prisoners or something, which it might be totally just me reading something into it that's not there, but they seem unhappy. They seem tense, you know? I don't know. They to me, I think maybe just because I'm associating it with Galen Erso and and those scientists who are kind of like forced to work for the Empire, but they don't seem, and there's like this assembly line nature to it, right? Like cogs in a machine kind of feeling to it, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, they don't, I'm not sure if it like prisoners of the Empire or, you know, forced to work for them or what, but, and I don't even know if it's for the Empire necessarily, but I'm assuming it is. Did you have any, like, I don't know, any, hypotheses about like what we're looking at in these shots of these people in these white, costumes?
Yeah. I mean, they definitely seem like scientists of some sort, and then we see like that shot later where they're like kind of, you know, in line walking through these like tubes.
Yes.
Like a tube city, and they're all wearing these sort of jumpsuits. To me definitely seems like they're working for the Empire. Whether it's by their choice or not, I guess that's the question.
Yeah, it's really very noticeable. They all have these like very defined orange stripes down their arms in that shot at about the minute and 21 second mark of them going through those tubes. It felt like Kamino, and it's not Kamino, I'm sure. I don't think it could be unless it was like a flashback type thing. I think like just looking at it closely, it looks different enough anyways that it's probably not Kamino. and we know Kamino's been destroyed. So by the time that this show takes place, so I don't think it's Kamino, but it gave me the Kamino vibes, especially seeing like these people walking like in a line, all wearing the same uniform and that sort of thing. So, you know, they all look very different from one another. I don't think they're clones, but I don't know. There's something about the imagery, like between the Kamino thing, the very uniform outfits, the single file line kind of through these tubes, all of it, it just makes it feel, I don't know, it evokes similar ideas, I guess, or similar feelings that I get from like the clones and that whole program.
Yeah. Yeah. And it adds like a bit of, it kind of reminds you that this is, you know, it, a lot of this trailer brings like the wars part of Star Wars, and this kind of brings like the star part of it. Mm. Like that outer worldly, you know, sci-fi part of it. You know, cause it's almost kind of like a little bit like Logan's Run, to it as well. So yeah, I'm curious about that for sure.
Hmm. Yeah. So, then last couple things from the trailer, I thought this was an interesting and kind of smart and cool choice. Starting at about the like minute 25 mark or somewhere along there, minute 24, we get a series of shots, kind of a match cut, like series of match cuts, of the backs and like a shot, of all these different characters from behind. It kind of cuts from one to the next, and it's like starts with the gong guy, and then you get that Imperial officer who we haven't talked about yet, but and then an Imperial, like a woman, an Imperial man, and then maybe the gong guy again, I don't know, or somebody else who's seems like more of a rebel type person. But I really liked that series of shots just because it sort of, to me, it kind of gave me the, I think the intention was to be like, there's all these different players, right? This is going to be this like political or, you know, kind of complex narrative about all these different little groups and groups of people and, you know, different, you know, components of this story. Right. But at the end of it, it's about these different people and, you know, kind of maybe the groups and the desires or the goals that each of these different groups of people have, you know what I mean? And so it's kind of just, yeah, like dropping them one after the other like that with the matching, you know, shots for each of these characters. To me, it was just like a cool way of saying like, the show's going to be about, and this story is about, you know, how all these different like groups and all these different individuals sort of factor into this bigger story.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really cool sequence.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. And then as we start to wrap up here, sort of like what we see in the trailer anyway, there is this Imperial officer who we get quite a few shots of. I looked up the actor's name earlier and now I've forgotten what it is. It starts with a K. Whoops. Should have held on to that. Yeah, like there's enough shots of him and shots of him, you know, emoting and, you know, single shots of him, stuff like that in this trailer that I think it's pretty clear he's going to be, if not the primary antagonist, like a pretty central villain in the show. Would you follow me down that path, Ryan?
Yeah. I mean, okay. Possibly. It's so hard to say. Cause like I said earlier, like this is just kind of, you know, it's just like a tone piece. It's, you know, just giving us the vibe. It's really, you know, it gives us like the broad overview of like, you know, the Galactic War, or the, I guess it's not even a war quite yet. But the makings of that. But you know, I feel like it's almost too soon to make predictions with the information we have, because it's very possible we could get Zuvio'd or Ricolade again here just as easily. And they could also be like, you know, this could be just stuff from the first 20 minutes of the show, and not like the whole scope, or it could be like these are shots from the first 7 episodes, like, it's so hard to tell with a lot of these teasers.
Yeah. I fully expect to get Zuvio'd on some of the predictions I'm making here for sure. You know, just I'm not trying to like be super attached to any of these theories or, you know, like be like, oh, I'm so convinced this is what it's going to be. But just making some guesses and the guess that I would make about him, the actor's name, by the way, is Kyle Soler. Yeah, Kyle Soler. So, yeah, my guess is he's a significant Imperial. Actually, like the look of the character reminds me of Agent Callus quite a bit. That's like the vibe I get from looking at him. But, you know, I'm not saying that that's who it is or anything like that. But, you know, kind of reminds me of Agent Callus a little bit. So maybe it'll be a similar character in some ways. I don't know. Or maybe they just look kind of similar. But that's kind of the vibe I get from that guy. Yeah. Otherwise, final things. There is a shot or a couple shots here towards the end of some speeders, like on a street that crashes. And I don't know if it's a speeder or a troop transport or what, but big time Solo vibes. Really reminded me of the look of Solo, A Star Wars Story. And I thought that was cool because, like, you know, you think about like when is this show set? At least parts of it are set pretty close to that Solo era, I think, right? You know, some of it's going to be a few years, I believe, before Rogue One. But some of it's probably a little further back than that, too. And Solo, A Star Wars Story, kind of occupies that space, like right between the prequels and the original trilogy. And obviously, Rogue One is much more like adjacent to the original trilogy, or really, you know, kind of in the exact same era as the original trilogy. But I think the show will be like a little before that, you know what I mean? And maybe quite a bit before that, depending on what part of the show or time frame of the show we're looking at. So a little bit of like design that feels similar to Solo or from that similar era to Solo makes sense, I think. And then last thing, we have this character. This character, according to the subtitles, is named Marva. Played by Fiona Shaw, who I believe she's in those Harry Potter films that you like, Ryan. So maybe did you recognize her from that?
I don't. The really woman like at the those end. Films, but oh. And I don't recognize her.
Okay, all right.
So yeah, I think you're thinking of Kevin.
Well, I know Kevin likes him. Yeah. Okay, fair enough. I guess I'm just thinking of myself and the fact that I don't like them, and I just assume the rest of the world does. I guess I don't know, but
not so much anymore.
yeah. And I shouldn't even say that I don't like them because I've seen like 20 minutes of one of them. Didn't like those 20 minutes.
You'll be fine.
Actually, I saw like 20 minutes of the first one, like more than one time, and then I saw like the final 45 minutes of the last one, I think, which was not a good way to. They were like on a bridge, and there it was a climactic finale, and I had no idea who anybody was or what was happening. So, not the point here. The point is that this character's name is Marva. Yeah, that's what I did. Yep. Except if you just machete out like 95% of the entire story, just if that's what the machete order is, then that's what I did. I don't even know what house I am, Ryan. But anyway, this character's name is Marva, and she has the fantastic set of lines here. People are standing up. That's what a reckoning sounds like, which I thought was super epic and an awesome way to close it out. It's what a reckoning. The word reckoning specifically is like a really powerful word, right?
Yeah. It's bigger than like rebellion or resistance. Like it's like a reckoning, like implies not just like opposition, but consequences.
Yes, exactly. Like your actions, in this case, I assume the Empire's actions and behavior, like there is a consequence to that, right? You can do those things, but there's going to be a reckoning. And they're Cassian Andor and his friends are fixing to serve that up to the Empire, right? Like that's the impression, which that sounds good.
Like it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's all I had from the trailer. Do you have anything else on the Cassian Andor trailer?
No. I think it's it is a tasty tease for sure. And, you know, I'm excited that, you know, we'll get more information, you know, probably, you know, after a little bit after Obi-Wan wraps up, mm-hmm. we will be on the Andor cycle.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's a little less than 3 months. So I think July will be, actually, Obi-Wan wraps up, I think, like early July, like maybe the first week of July. And then this will be the very end of August. So we'll have almost 2 months there without any new, you know, live action content there, which is right now feels like a long time. But we're used to going like a year without any new,
yeah.
You know,
I think we'll survive.
Yeah, we'll be okay. We'll be okay.
Yeah.
But as far as like hype cycles and all that stuff go, I bet July might be a little quiet, you know, maybe like most of July. But then once we get to 4 to 6 weeks away from Andor, I'm sure start to learn more and see, you know, get another trailer and all that kind of thing. So will be fun. All right, cool. Well, why don't we then move on to talking about Skeleton Crew, the formerly referred to as Grammar Rodeo. And this was we didn't get a lot on this. We got one image, and about 3 or 4 minutes of conversation from the creatives involved in this show. So I rewatched the portion of the live action showcase this morning that featured, you know, the Skeleton Crew announcement or whatever. Somebody had posted it on YouTube, so I went back and watched it because unfortunately that panel is still not still not online. Not only did
I was just going to ask you. I was gonna say, oh whoa, it's up. I didn't know that. But so was a bootleg video?
Yeah, it's like a cell phone video that somebody posted. I could credit them. It's a Disney, some kind of Disney, like, you know, YouTube channel or whatever. But so they just posted like the 3 or 4 minutes of that. And there's nothing in there. I mean,
I guess
confusing.
It's just people talking. So
it's like, still confusing that they didn't stream that panel. I tried to find the Mando season 3 trailer again, just to rewatch it. And I was not able to find that. Now, I didn't look for a super long time, but I was not able to find it. What I did find is a ton of YouTube videos that are fake Mandalorian season 3 trailers. So that was annoying. Ooh. So if you Google like Mandalorian season 3 trailer or go to YouTube and search that, a ton of stuff will pop up. But from what I found, it's all just like people making fake trailers using footage from season 2. And yeah. So they've pulled down all the cell phone videos from at least the like super easily accessible sources. I'm sure, I don't know if it's still on Reddit somewhere or you can, you know, yeah, I'm sure on the dark web, Ryan, you can still find the Mandalorian trailer, but they have pulled that down, but like, there's no reason. It's just really strange. I don't know. I'm not sure why they didn't. I guess they just really want us to feel like we have to go to Celebration to experience these things. But, I don't know. I'm not a marketer. We could talk to some of our friends who work in that field, but to me, you're missing the opportunity to market this stuff to people who really want to know about it, you know? So,
I mean, I think it will like, yeah, I don't understand why the, why like the stage part of it is still like hidden. I just want to hear people talking and like, you know, especially because I think especially in the case of like Skeleton Crew, I think things have been misquoted. Things have been misinterpreted around their lines. And like a whole big deal has been made out of some of the, you know, the John Watts's comments that were on that stage. And then, like, you know, we were like talking about it in our Star Wars thread and you were like, no, I was there. It was like this offhanded line that like doesn't actually mean anything. And yeah. Like, yeah.
And I'll include the audio of that so listeners can decide for themselves, because I watched it again this morning and I was like, well, I think it was misinterpreted, like especially if you just read it online, but also it was a weird comment to make too. So we'll get into it more in a second here. But
okay.
Yeah. as far as what that panel, or not even a panel, as far as what that portion of the, you know, live action showcase was probably less than 5 minutes. And it was Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni, which, you know, we know now that they're involved as executive producers on this show, Skeleton Crew. But I don't think I was really thinking of it that way going into it, you know, that they were, this is another Favreau and Filoni joint, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, I don't know how involved they are, but they are executive producers. So they were on stage. But most of the discussion came from John Watts and Chris Ford, who are also, you know, executive producers and I think writers. And I don't know if they both direct or what, but I think maybe Chris Ford is more the writer and John Watts is the director. But yeah, anyway, that's who was on stage, and they had an image. And basically they just gave a brief like overview of what the show is about and then showed a logo. And that was pretty much it.
So this is a show that we've been working on for a really long time and are so excited to finally get to make. It's the story about a group of kids about 10 years old from tiny little planet who accidentally get lost in the Star Wars galaxy, and it's the story of their journey trying to find their way home. And to be clear, we want to make sure that everyone gets it's Star Wars for kids, but it is not a kids show. It is
right. You think it's about, they like to say it's like as much for kids as Clone Wars. I'm like, well, we cut people's heads off in Clone Wars, so I'm not sure that's the measurement you're looking for, but okay, sure. I mean, they'll be excited about that. Okay. Star Wars is for kids, anyway. All for kids. We're all big kids. I love it since I was a kid. I'm still going to love it when I'm much older, like I am now. So you're going to love it. You're going to love it.
Can you guys tell us where it takes place in the Star Wars timeline?
Well, I mean, we're producing it with these wonderful gentlemen here, and so luckily we get to fold it into that, you know, after Return of the Jedi, Ahsoka, Mandalorian time frame.
Yeah. All connected in weird ways.
Good. Is this mysterious enough? Are we being mysterious enough?
I think so. It's good. Yeah, it's a good level of mystery. It's farther on.
John, would you like to expand the storytelling in the Star Wars universe?
Oh, for us? Yeah. There's a lot of Johns. Which John?
There's a lot of Johns.
He's happy to me. So. We really like the opportunity of using kids to give you a slightly different perspective on the Star Wars universe, to see the galaxy through a different pair of eyes.
Okay.
That's been really fun for us to explore. And we
other start John, mission.
Oh yeah, other John, happy? Yeah.
Do you want to say something?
Do you want to say anything?
Well, what's it called? That's what I want to know.
Well, should I do it for you? For you, do it. You tell me. Okay, it's going to be called Star Wars Skeleton Crew.
Woo!
Whoa. Oh, and it stars Jude Law.
Oh! The Gary Glee! The Gary Glee, guys!
That's pretty cool, right?
It stars who again?
Jude Law. Yes, that's a picture of him.
That's a picture of him when he found out that he wasn't allowed to come to the celebration.
Yeah. It's a shame he's not good looking, guys. Sad, but he's not. Okay, so we have the title. We know a little bit of what's happening.
That's it. That's
when
it.
Do we get to see it?
We start shooting pretty soon, so you guys get to see it next year.
All right.
I will see you on Saturday for the Mando panel, too.
But what we did learn, or what I learned, you know, from this panel, or from this portion of the panel, John Watts? Is that John Watts? Yeah. Chris Ford, John Watts. Okay, so John Watts said they've been working on it a long, long time. Two longs. He used the word long twice. Been working on it for a long, long time.
Interesting.
So that's That's good. He also said they start shooting soon. So I guess it's good that they've been working on it for a long, long time. but it feels so new. You know what I mean? It feels like something we just found out about and whatever. So
we just found out about / learned about it 6 months ago.
Yeah. But even still, that's pretty new, you know, feeling to me, like in comparison to some of this stuff that, like,
having
known about
confirmed,
for a really long time.
Like, because this stuff is never, I mean, even until we see a trailer, like that's where I draw my line. Like, it's real once I see footage of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I mean, like, they say that they're going to be filming soon, but you never know. Like, things have gotten canceled after they start filming, or, you know, people get fired or whatever. I don't think that's a major concern for this, but you never know. So yeah, working on a long time, start shooting soon is announced to come out in 2023. So it is aiming to release next year. And as far as the story goes, it is a story about a group of kids that are about 10 years old from a tiny little planet who accidentally get lost in the Star Wars galaxy. And the show's, you know, then about their journey to find their way home. So that's sort of the synopsis, and that's the most they really said about, like, what it's about. So yeah, I mean, that sounds interesting. Definitely the, you know, a group of kids around 10 years old. That's sort of like your Stand By Me or your E.T. or, you know, Goonies or whatever kind of vibe, right? That people were reporting that's what the show would be. And, you know, if you're going to say, I'm going to describe the show in one sentence, that's all we're going to give fans of Star Wars Celebration. That's all we're going to give the world right now, is basically a sentence of what the show's about. Well, it's about a group of little kids who get lost and have to find their way home. That's what the show's about. So yeah, it seems like that really is what it is, you know? Cause I mean, look at Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi features way more heavily than I expected, or, you know, I didn't expect at all, but like way more heavily than we ever would have thought for a show called Obi-Wan Kenobi. It features a 10-year-old little girl, you know what I mean? And it really follows her at a lot of points throughout the show, but you wouldn't say, oh, it's a show about a 10-year-old girl, you know what I mean? Whereas this, the way they're describing it, it's about a group of 10-year-old kids. Like, that's really what the show is going to be focused on, I'm sure. So that is unique for Star Wars. And later on in the discussion, I think it was Chris Ford who said this, said, we like the opportunity of using kids to give you a different perspective, see the galaxy through a different set of eyes. So for me personally, like, I find that pretty compelling, pretty interesting. That's like one reason I'm pretty excited for the show, because it seems like something different.
Yeah.
So that's cool. But the part that we were talking about, we alluded to earlier, that we were discussing in our group chat and all that, is, and that the internet, I think, kind of latched onto, right? Is this comment, and again, this was Chris Ford, who said, Star Wars is for kids, but it's not a kid show. And that seems like a weird thing to say, doesn't it? Like, oh, it's for kids, but it's not a kid show. Like, why can't it be a kid show? What's wrong with that? You know, I didn't think much of it at the time when I was in the panel, but then, you know, you and others had mentioned it, because you weren't able to watch this one, so you were just kind of reading about, like, what was being said, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you guys had brought it up, and I think your feeling was that it was a super weird thing, right? It was like almost like a, well, tell me, what was your feeling on that comment? Like, how did you interpret it when you read it?
I didn't really. Like, I mean, to me, from everything we know, I think with Favreau and Filoni's involvement, with, you know, the era it's set, like, it seems like it's just going to be set in, like, the Mandoverse timeline, the Mando cinematic universe. And so I just kind of assumed it would, like, follow that tone. So, like, it's a story about kids, but I wouldn't, like, it's not a kid's show in the way, like, I guess, like, Resistance was, or, you know, Jedi Academy, or what that show was, Jedi Temple Challenge. Like, those are things like Forces of Destiny, where I'm like, that those are, like, really targeted for kids. And we'll talk about another one when we talk about the animation, the High Republic shorts. Like, those seem very targeted at kids. But yeah, this just seems like, yeah, it's about kids, but it's not, like, in that, you know, Star Wars kids stuff. It's in the Mandoverse.
Yeah, I think that's what they meant. Which, if that's what they mean, that's fine. Like, oh, it's not only for 5-year-olds, you know? Like, okay, well, I wouldn't expect that. But I think it'd be kind of weird for Steven Spielberg to come out in, like, you know, 1985 or whatever and be like, so we're making this movie, the Goonies. It's not a kid's movie. Like, don't worry, it's not for kids. Like, that would be a weird thing to say. And it's not. Like, the Goonies is not like Star Wars Resistance on Disney XD, right? Like, it's not. But it's ridiculous to be like, oh, it's not a kid's movie. You know what I mean? Of course it's a kid's movie. I mean, it's not limited to only being a kid's movie, but, like, you know, I think a big part of the charm and a big part of the appeal of a movie like Goonies is that it's for kids, right? I think when you have a cast of, you know, it's hard not to, like, even Stranger Things, which I know you're thrilled that I keep bringing up on this podcast, but, like, Stranger Things is a show that's, like, you know, pretty inappropriate for kids at a lot of, you know, a lot of junctures. Like, it's sometimes violent. It has adult content at times, whatever, but, like, it is in a lot of ways a kid's show, because when you watch a show where you follow a young cast of characters, kids are going to like that. You know, my youngest son is watching Stranger Things with us and he puts a blanket over his head for like 20 minutes every episode and, like, covers his ears because it's too scary for him. But, like, he likes those kids, so he wants to watch it still. You know what I mean? And it is a kid's show, even something like Stranger Things. So I think it's kind of dumb. Well, maybe kind of dumb is a little harsh, but I feel like it's a little too defensive to come out of the gate right away and be like, oh, it's not for kids, you know, because let's embrace it. It can be for kids, I feel like.
Yeah, I don't know, like, how much to read into it. I think, like, in my head, like, the thing about, like, those, you know, that Amblin era of films, and, like, there's a bunch of stuff that, like, I just kind of, like, clump in there because, like, I, you know, it's not, I don't know if it's not, like, technically one, but, like, Gremlins and, like, stuff like that, I, like, put all in this, like, same bucket. It's what I consider those are movies that were rated below what they would be rated now by the Motion Picture Association of America. That you know, even like Jim Henson stuff, like Labyrinth and like all that stuff, like, it's, you know, would be, I think, was, you know, kind of made for kids slash the young at heart, I guess. But, like, they were not afraid to, like, make things scary, make, like, include death, like, in, you know, include some swearing, like, you know, E.T., they say douchebag in it. Like, that's weird for you. Like, you wouldn't get a kid's movie, like, these days where, like kids are saying that. You know, like, I don't, but also, like, it feels like most things made for kids these days are animated shows. Like, I'm trying to think, like, what is a kid's movie that has, like, come out recently?
Yeah, no, I can't think of too many either. Like, I mean, going way back, I guess there was, like, the Spy Kids movies, right? Like, that would be, like, an example of something like that.
But even at that time, people were like, whoa, these are kids' movies in the theater. Like, they're live action, they're not animated. Like, I remember that being a big deal, and, like, Robert Rodriguez being like, yeah, I want to make kids movies, I want to make movies for kids, and like live action ones with cool effects and stuff.
I mean, there's rare. Definitely, like, stuff that gets made for, like, Netflix and things like that that are that are in that vein, but yeah, there's, it's not a lot. You're right I think you're right about that. And I think, again, maybe this will be the last time I bring it up on this episode, I'm not sure, but I think that's one of the reasons, like, Stranger Things hit pretty hard with certain audiences, is because, like, that is an underserved, I think it's kind of an underserved, you know, demographic or whatever. It's not underserved in terms of, like there's not enough content coming out for kids, but, like, content of that type, you know what I mean? So when you get a little bit of it, it's like, ooh, wow, this is cool. It's cool to see. I would think like, as a kid, it'd be cool to watch a show that's in some ways for you, and it's about people like you, you know, kids, but doesn't treat you like a kid necessarily, you know, like the kids in Stranger Things are allowed to swear and they do things, you know, that you know, they're not supposed to be doing, and they go off and they save their own skins and stuff like that, you know, like that kind of thing where it's, I think that would be, I know that was like one of the reasons I loved, you know, the Amblin movies was because it featured a young cast, but it empowered that young cast. And as a kid watching those movies, it was exciting to see, not only kids kind of being the heroes of their own stories, but also to see the movie and the writing and everything treat them like real characters and not just like little kids, you know what I mean? So, I think hopefully this show might do a little bit of that. I guess we don't know, but I think it could. Now, Filoni, though, kind of clarified this comment a little bit, which, I mean, really, we could have probably just not even had that whole conversation because Filoni, like, clarified it shortly after and said, well, hey, like, Clone Wars is for kids, right? You know, he pointed out Clone Wars is for kids, but we cut people's heads off in that show. So, in other words, like, you know, he was saying pretty much, like, people think of things for kids one way, but there's more to it than that, you know, where like, oh, the Clone Wars is a kid show, but it's really not for kids. Okay, well, if what they mean by this is that it's not for kids in the same way Clone Wars isn't for kids, like, okay, fine, because Clone Wars is for kids, right? It has things that might be a little, it has things for other audiences too, but nobody would, I don't think anybody would look at the Clone Wars cartoon and be like, oh, well, that's not for kids, you know? No, my gosh, please don't think that show is for kids. Like, why not? Why? Of course it's for kids. It was on Cartoon Network, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, yeah, I think there's probably parents who would be like, "That's, I don't want my kids watching this because heads get cut off." I think so. I think there's like that side of things, but like honestly, like it really, it really does kind of seem like Star Wars is kind of the only like major brand that's like really making this kind of stuff. Cause even like Marvel movies, cause there was that big debate about like if the new Doctor Strange movie was like too scary and stuff. Like, I don't know. It's so hard to quantify this stuff. Like for me, like it's like, okay, is there like a ton of blood? Okay, if there's like there can be death, there can be like murders and stuff, but is there a ton of blood? Okay, that probably like puts it on like maybe not for kids. Same with like an F-bomb. Like an F-bomb. It's like, yeah, probably not. And but also like that's a very rigid way of looking at, but that's just kind of how it is in my head. And I feel like every Marvel movie, like do Marvel movies actually, do they have F-bombs? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean,
People say shit all the time. But you know, I think like Star Wars is unique in like the cusses aren't real cusses. Hootie. So yeah.
yeah.
And there's not really ever blood.
Yeah, no, not too much. Not really. Yeah.
Yeah. In Star Wars. So like, but there is like scary stuff. There's a ton of death, tons of death, tons of murder. But
I think Revenge of the Sith is always the one that people talk about. Like, I don't know if maybe I should show that to kids or not. You know, like whenever I talk to parents who are showing their kids Star Wars movies, like many times I've had parents tell me, oh yeah, I've shown them all except for Revenge of the Sith. We're waiting to show them that one, you know, just because of how brutal it is on Mustafar at the end there with the Anakin getting all burnt up and
burning,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's a little different.
And it's emotionally intense also. It's like violence mixed with like an emotional intensity. And you're seeing like one good guy do it to another good guy, you know, or who was a good guy for most of the movies and all that.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty difficult thing for kids to process, I think, or maybe a little more so than the other stuff. I mean, I should probably showed my kid Revenge of the Sith when he was like 4 or something. I don't know. But,
yeah, he did.
You know, I mean,
they
I understand.
Turned out all right. It's fine.
But he does really like horror movies and stuff. So I don't know.
You continue to indulge that. So
that's true.
But,
I do.
You know, right, also, right. Like, I think, you know, we also know that there's like not, you know, a clear connection with like children consuming, you know, violent media and like becoming violent people. Like,
But, you know, back to what you were saying though about like Star Wars being the only thing that, or the only kind of brand or whatever we want to call it, that like really caters to kids in that way, or makes stuff for kids, I guess, or whatever. You know, one of the most interesting things about that is that like almost every show or, you know, movie or whatever, I guess not the sequel trilogy, but there's usually a young character or like, I guess we have Grogu, right? You know, we had Anakin in The Phantom Menace. We have Grogu in The Mandalorian. In Clone Wars, you had Ahsoka, right? In Rebels, you had Ezra. And then even in Obi-Wan, you have a little Leia, you know, and things like that. So like a lot of times there is a point of view character or a way in for children, which I think is great. I mean, there's a little bit of that in Iron Man 2, if I'm remembering correctly. And I'm sure there is in some of the other Marvel movies and stuff too, a little bit. But I don't know, you know, it is a different thing, I think, when you go to see a movie and it's like you're watching all adult characters.
Yeah.
You know, and there's not like that younger, you know, character to be a sort of point, like Jurassic Park, right? You have these little kids that you're following around. And so I think like it hooks kids. It provides something for kids. And I don't think Star Wars or any other property should do that every single time or always feel like they always have to do that or right. whatever. But I do think it's a good thing, especially, you know, as we think about like how into Star Wars is the younger generation of fans or, you know, audiences or whatever. It's like, I think that's something that they should try to incorporate when it makes sense. And this, to me, this show Skeleton Crew seems like a really, really great opportunity to make a show, you know, in direct conflict with the statement made on the stage. I think this seems like a really great opportunity to make a show for kids, you know?
Yeah.
And for everybody else too, but for kids, you know?
I mentioned this whenever we were talking about this show, like with the Vanity Fair article and stuff, like I want this to be something that gets more kids into Star Wars. But also like I think you do that by like not like dumbing it down for kids or like talking down to the kids who are watching it, which you know, I teach first grade. You know, I know like my kids, like they love Grogu. They don't really know much else about Star Wars at this point, or have like much interest, but they love Grogu. And you know, also, you know, I watch lots of, video clips, and sometimes we watch movies in class, and like I see all this kind of stuff, and I get to like kind of gauge their reactions to different things, which is interesting. And yeah, like young kids, I think can, you know, and I think that's what makes those Amblin films so good, and like just that era of filmmaking so good, is like they never like dumbed it down or like talked down to the audience, and like just, you know, there's just a lot of like, I mean, you can get kids with like physical humor and, you know, and like, you know, like an animal singing a modern pop song or something like that and doing a silly dance. Like you can get kids with that stuff, but like you don't really need to. Like you can, you can just like tell good stories. They can be challenging. They can be, you know, just respecting the audience.
Sure.
So, I mean, we'll see how this turns out. We'll see what the tone is. You know, we've seen like this team of creators do a pretty good job writing and directing like teenager characters. It'll be interesting to see how they do with like younger characters, younger actors, and how they, you know, how they script it. But I think kind of like the last thing I want to say on this is like, you know, I just really hope that shitty Star Wars fans aren't shitty to whoever these kids end up being, because like, that's just, we're seeing that like same garbage again with the actor who played Leia that we saw with like Jake Lloyd and stuff. And come on, mm-hmm. like people, mm-hmm. like, yeah. Hopefully yeah. they make it out unscathed.
Yeah, agreed. You know, last thing we haven't talked about, Jude Law is in this show. Jude
yes.
Law.
Yes. Yeah.
So kids certainly a good Jude actor. Law.
they love they love the Elfie remake.
Uh huh. I Heart Huckabees. I think that was a big one of kids.
They uh-huh. kids love Closer.
Oh God. Yeah, Natalie Portman's in that, right?
Yeah, it's basically Star Wars.
right. Yeah, but no, I mean, Jude Law's certainly a very talented actor. I don't.
He's great.
I feel like I don't know that much about what he's done lately, or haven't really paid, you know, super close attention. But he's definitely good, and you know, pretty high profile for a show like a Star Wars show. You know, which all the Star Wars shows have pretty high profile actors in them, I guess, like Pedro Pascal and Werner Herzog, and you know, even like Rosario Dawson or whoever. Like these are pretty big names and prestigious names and stuff that will come up. Giancarlo Esposito, you know, pretty big names that'll come in and do mm-hmm. these Star Wars shows. So it shouldn't be surprising, I guess. But it is one of those things where it's like, oh wow, Jude Law, okay, big name, cool. Like I wonder what's attracting him to this project. It might be money, you know what I mean? It could be that, but maybe he's a big Star Wars fan. Maybe he's not. I don't know anything about, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah, hopefully it's I guess what I'm trying to say is that hopefully a big name actor like Jude Law wanting to do this Star Wars TV show is a good sign that this Star Wars TV show is promising. Right. And that's why he's signing on to do it. So I don't know if that's true or not, but that'd be my hope. I think it seems like a positive sign.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, who am I about to introduce? Since the last Star Wars celebration, this team has given us 2 seasons of The Mandalorian. Right now, they are in production on Ahsoka, Jon Favreau, and Dave Filoni.
Ahsoka is going great. We are super fortunate to have Rosario Dawson fronting this thing.
Also in 2023, we'll have a new chapter of The Mandalorian.
And we're going to have some returning favorites joining our next season, including Bo-Katan Kryze, Katie Sackhoff.
You guys didn't think you were going to get rid of me that easily, did you?
Okay. All right, Ryan, why don't we talk about Mandalorian Season 3 and Ahsoka, you know, I mean, separately, but maybe sort of together, too, because we, let's see, I went to the Mandalorian Season 3 panel streaming, I think, right? Or did I go in person? I'm trying to remember. Yeah, I went to the streaming one on the Galaxy stage. Yeah. We all did. Okay, this is the one we all went to together on the Galaxy stage.
We were there
stage.
Together, okay. Yes.
All right, okay. It was a long weekend.
Yeah. Still recovering.
I remember now. Okay, Galaxy stage, streaming the Mandalorian Season 3 panel, which was honestly great. It was totally great to be in that streaming room. No problem. So we watched the panel. You know, we heard from many of the actors involved in the show, including Temuera Morrison, you know, because they talked a little bit about Book of Boba Fett, and obviously he was in Mandalorian Season 2. He and Daniel Logan sort of... Oh, no, that was at the Attack of the Clones panel. But Temuera Morrison was at the Mandalorian Season 3 panel. Anyway, a lot of the actors were Dave Filoni, Jon Favreau. A lot of the panel was spent talking about Season 2 of The Mandalorian, but we did get a look at Mandalorian Season 3, and I didn't necessarily expect this, but we got a look at Ahsoka as well. So it's a pretty big deal. And this was your first big panel of Star Wars Celebration, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So exciting times in that regard as well.
Great.
So,
yeah.
Well, why don't we talk about Mandalorian Season 3? I know that you came out of that panel a little more optimistic or a little more excited and hopeful about Mandalorian season three than you had been, you know, like in recent months, I guess we could say, right? Or since the finale of season two.
Yeah.
So tell me about that. What is it about, you know, what you learned in this panel that kind of like increased your excitement for Mandalorian stuff going forward?
I think like it's just the show has such a clear focus at this point. I feel like season one had a really strong focus on, you know, Din protecting Grogu. Season two, I think between all the cameos and the way, you know, the story kind of branched off at different points and like introduced these new players and everything, it just feels a little muddled to me. And I think like it's also just kind of like it's weird that like season two ended with this like huge cliffhanger, and then like the cliffhanger was resolved in like one episode of this other TV show like in between the seasons. And so like I just kind of had this like going into Mando season three, I was like, what even is this show at this point? Like, because I think, you know, it became a lot of things, by the end of season two. And then like Book of Boba Fett kind of just further muddied the waters a bit, as far as like a statement of intent for the show goes. And I think this trailer was like, okay, here's what this season is about. It's about, you know, Din trying to, you know, reclaim his honor, his part of, you know, this particular Mandalorian clan. It's about, you know, Bo-Katan and like what she wants. And there's like a very like, is she a good, you know, on Din's side? Is she going to be the primary antagonist, or is she going to just be this like sort of gray area character? And then, you know, it's about the remains of Mandalore, and like I would assume like who is going to claim and rule Mandalore. So, you know, we've talked in the past about, you know, neither you or I are like wherever super deep into like the Mandalorian clans and you know, hierarchies and stuff, but I think we both kind of like warmed up to it through the way it was introduced in The Mandalorian. And so I think there is like that seems like a very clear story to tell that feels like it could go in a lot of different directions. I don't think there is, you know, as where we're at right now, I don't think there is like a very clear like, oh yeah, this is how it's going to end feeling to it. Like, you know, is it going to be, you know, is it going to be Din on the throne at the end? If that's like the goal of this, is it, you know, Bo-Katan? Is it someone else? And yeah, so I think the show, I just kind of like understand what the show is about again, kind of. And I think this isn't really the Star Wars live action project I'm most excited about, but I'm glad it feels like it has a focus. And I think this is going to be like just a massive crowd pleaser, I guess, which I don't mean that in like a derogatory sort of way. I think like this is going to be something that like everyone is just gonna have fun watching. And I think stuff like Andor and Skeleton Crew and the Acolyte, and even like Obi-Wan right now are like a little more like focused at like certain groups of Star Wars fans, But this feels like, you know, and we already know, like, Mandalorian has, like, this super broad appeal. And this, you know, this trailer is like, hey, you're getting Mandalorians jumping out of ships and, you know, looking badass. And there's this war and there's, like, this destroyed city and, you know, stakes are high and there's these, like, compelling characters and, you know, Grogu's here. You don't have to worry about
it. Tells you, you get Grogu. Yep.
Like, he's doing Grogu things. Like, yeah, I think, like, it just seems like an Avengers Endgame sort of, like, yeah, this is just gonna, we're just gonna go all out and, like, there's gonna be all these, like, moments to cheer for and, you know, people are gonna be generally happy with this. And it's going to be big and epic, and I don't mean that, like, in a condescending way. I think it's going to be, like, you know, just a really fun experience.
Yeah. I wonder if season 3 will be like Endgame Part 1 and season 4 like Endgame Part 2, because they are going to do a season 4 at least. So it'll be interesting to see how that all shakes out. But yeah, I think. You know, after seeing this footage that they put together, I hesitate to even call it a trailer because I don't think they'll ever release it as a trailer, you know, to the public or whatever. Just because I think they want to be a little more careful a little more careful with exactly how they message, you know, what the show is to, like, the mainstream, like, worldwide audience. You know, you can put something together like this for Star Wars nerds and we're going to be like, you know, yeah, love it, you know, eat it up or whatever. But, and I think general audiences would enjoy this as well, but, like, obviously there's people that get paid a lot of money and, there's a lot of people that focus really hard on exactly how do we message this to, you know, the world to get the most eyes on Disney Plus watching the show. And, so anyways, I think there will be a more targeted, more, you know, more general audience focused trailer when they do release it to the rest of the world. But yeah, watching this, it was like, okay, well, yeah, and you kind of made a similar comment, but I guess I see a little bit why they went and did the Grogu Luke stuff in Book of Boba Fett, because the show seems to be so much not about that kind of thing. And so it's like, need to solve that problem. And then, you know, that way season 3 can be really focused on, you know, going in a different direction, where, like, those episodes of Book of Boba Fett really felt like they were wrapping up a storyline from season 2. It's a storyline I expected to continue throughout season 3 of Mandalorian, but clearly, I mean, obviously it's not, right? So if that's not what the focus of season 3 is, if season 3 is about something completely different, then I, you know, in retrospect, I kind of like the idea of, like, let's just, you know, in a separate kind of thing or whatever, like, months and months beforehand, let's tackle that and resolve that. And then, you know, we can make a new season of television that is singularly focused on, you know, kind of one primary story or whatever. So in that regard, it makes sense. You know, I don't know that it would have hurt the show if it was just like the first two episodes of season 3 were those episodes of Book of Boba Fett. Like, that probably would work too, but I don't know. It makes a little more sense. So, yeah. And I'm with you. I'm not the biggest, you know, Mando culture guy or whatever. I don't exactly know what a Death Watch is or whatever, you know, I mean, I kind of do, but, it's not like on paper, that's not something that super, super excites me. But I think if the show is focused just on that stuff, then I'm going to get more interested and I'm going to be more involved. I think, like, the way it was in season 1 and especially in season 2 is, like, Bo-Katan and, you know, all these Mandalorian politic type things were sort of one branch of the story, but it wasn't ever, like, the total focus or anything, you know what I mean? And so I'm watching a show where I've got multiple things I can focus on and multiple things I can respond to, and that's not really the thing that I was responding to or focusing on. But if it becomes what the show is about, then I think I'm gonna be more invested, you know. So I think that's all good. As far as, like, some of the images that we saw, some of the stuff that was most exciting, in the trailer, we got some Babu Fricks. You may remember Babu Fricks. So Babu Fricks was good. You mentioned the sort of, like, drop ship scene or shot where the Mandalorians, like, the floor opens up from that ship they're in. And they just sort of drop out, presumably to rocket away with their rocket packs. Like, that was pretty awesome. We got a tree with, like, a nest of, Quakey and monkey lizards. That was cool. So I don't know. Maybe we'll go to what planet are Kowakee and monkey lizards from? Is it Kowak?
Kowakee? I don't know.
I feel like it's, I don't know. So whatever planet they're from, maybe that's where we are. Maybe it's just Navarro again, or I don't know. Obviously, we've seen Kowakee and monkey lizards. Yeah, right. But that was pretty fun to see. There's a really cool shot where somebody falls like through the ceiling of a cave or something like that. And Bo-Katan is down there with Grogu, and she looks at Grogu and she's like, "You didn't think your dad was the only Mandalorian, did you?" But the tone of her voice, it's like a little ominous. It's like a little, yeah, a little scary. It's a little like, ooh, I don't know. Should we trust you, Bo-Katan? You know, that sort of thing. It's also the trailer or the footage made it clear that Din is still definitely like hellbent on atoning and being welcomed back into his Mandalorian cult. Like he wants to make it up to, you know, the armorer who tells him you're not a Mandalorian anymore. You know, what did she say? You took your helmet off and what's worse, you did it. I forget what it was. Do you remember? It was like, what's worse, you did it by choice, or what's worse, you did it. I think that's what it was. Maybe you did it by choice, but so that's all being explored still as well. So I didn't take notes while I was watching the trailers. Well, they had people in suits like,
dude,
everywhere.
I was not about to take out my phone during that.
Yeah, you should have brought a notebook. Yeah. Or I should have brought a notebook with, you know, a pen and paper to write something down.
Yeah, I'm sure someone did. I'm sure that information exists somewhere, or like bolted out of that panel and just like typed out everything they saw. I'm sure
you should have typed out everything when you watched the bootleg video, because you watched a bootleg video of it.
I did watch a bootleg video and I just figured there'd always be bootleg videos. Because I watched the one from the Thursday showing, which is like half as long as the one we saw at the panel.
Okay. Yeah. There was new stuff. Yeah.
There was a lot of new stuff, and I think a lot of like really cool stuff in the longer one that we saw.
Any other cool stuff that we haven't mentioned?
I think it's all about the, like, which is wild, because like this is not really even a character like I really thought about or connected with during like Clone Wars, but Bo-Katan like is just a really compelling character at this point. I hope they don't, like, you know, because we got to use wrestling terminology every episode. I hope they don't make her like full heel, like nuclear heat heel, or like full baby face. I think like she needs to be, a tweener. Like that, I think the stuff we've seen of her is like really compelling. And I think, you know, Katie Sackhoff is just like so committed to that role and just like embodies that role so much. And she just like looks perfect in it. You know, I would say that's probably my favorite animation to live action jump. I think her character, is the best. I think she's just a really compelling possible antagonist, and her story is just really interesting to me. I'm here for it, as the kids say.
Okay. All right, well, why don't we talk then just about the Ahsoka information, and we did see some footage. You know, to wrap up the show here, we'll finish up with Ahsoka. I guess I should have, maybe I did expect, because the panel was called Mando Plus, so maybe I did expect some Ahsoka info, but because they've only been filming, I think we found out that they had just finished the third week of filming the day before this panel. Because they'd been filming so, you know, they'd only just started so recently, I did not expect to see any footage, but we did get some footage. There was no dialogue, I don't think, right? I can't remember for sure, but we did get some footage. It was fantastic. Before the footage, Rosario Dawson came out on stage, which she had not been at the panel on Thursday, so she was there on Saturday, which people are excited about. And then Natasha Liu Bordizzo was brought out and announced to be playing Sabine. in live action in the show Ahsoka. So that was pretty exciting as well. It was a little bit weird, the whole moment. We talked about this off air, Ryan, but Dave Filoni, he had a little bit of a rough time, or like just was being very careful to talk about, you know, the actors playing, specifically Natasha Lou Bordizzo playing Sabine, but I guess also a little bit Rosario playing Ahsoka, in the sense that like they had been played in animation by other people. And now we're using different actors, and he tried really hard to talk about that without being insulting to the animation director or animation actors, but also by saying kind of like, I have to look at everything and make the best choice for any specific project. And, you know, pretty much like, this is better because I have these other actors playing these roles, but without saying that, because that's kind of offensive. But I do you agree that that was like basically what he was trying to say without having to say it?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was a little awkward, and just like, I guess the inconsistency of everything, because like I was just talking about, like, Bo-Katan is played by the actress who voiced her in the animation.
Yeah, but, you know, you say inconsistency, but that's not necessarily inconsistent with what he said, because what he said was like, in any situation, I have to make the best decision. And I think if you look at Katie Sackhoff and you think like, if we make her Bo-Katan live action, she's going to be dynamite. She's going to be incredible in the role. Yeah. It's going to be fantastic. But then you look at other actors who, you know, did these characters in animation, and you think, I don't know that it's going to translate, or it might be okay, but this other person would be amazing. So, yeah, you know, I think what he was trying to say is, I'm not going to, you know, it's so hard. You can't, because we're talking about real people here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's talking about real people. So I would never want him to get up there and say, look, Ashley Eckstein could be a passable Ahsoka, but she wouldn't be in a fantastic Ahsoka. She wouldn't be the Ahsoka I want on live action. Or Tia Sakaar would be an okay Sabine, but she wouldn't be the Sabine that Natasha Lou Bordizzo would be. You know, I don't know that those things are true, but I'm just saying, I think that's what the calculus was, right? Like, based on his comments. And again, he tried to dance around it as much as he possibly could. I think he hated having to talk about it. He seemed really uncomfortable.
He did. It was the only time we saw him sweat that entire weekend, because he was like, he was just on fire at every panel. And like, yep. And then that moment, it was like, whoa, this is an awkward situation. And I think also, like, he was taking the ownership of that. But we don't fully know if that's on him to own. Like, there could have been people higher up. Like, I mean, back when Rosario Dawson was originally cast as Ahsoka, and it was rumored for a while, and like fans were like, "Oh, I hope this isn't true." Like, I hope this isn't true. It's got to be Ashley. And then it was like finally announced, and people were like, what the hell? And like all of that, like, to me, it was like, well, they could have just went with like a more marketable actor, like someone who, you know, because, you know, really with anything, like, even though like we're deep in the weeds of Star Wars and we know like, I mean, we know the names of like creature designers and stuff, but like generally with like very few exceptions, like, you know, your Spielbergs and Scorsese's and stuff, like writers, directors, like the general populace doesn't care about those things when like consuming TV shows or, you know, films. They go by actors, like, and, you know, you like to be a recognizable actor is like the strongest possible currency in like the film and entertainment industry. Like, it's bigger than anything else.
Yeah. Well, and this might be a place, Ryan, I'll make this quick, you know, for our listeners who don't share our interest in professional wrestling, but this may be a place where our interest in professional wrestling could be, you know, instructive a little bit, because, like, I think you and I both know that sometimes you have a wrestler who is a really great worker, like between the ropes. But, you know, to really make it to that next level as a professional wrestler, you need to be great between the ropes, you know, like in terms of like the actual professional wrestling moves and putting a match together and having things flow from one, you know, part of the match to the next, et cetera, all those things. You need to have those things. But to get to the next level, you also have to be a good talker, which obviously, you know, anybody who played these characters in animation, they're good talkers. I'm not even, you know, at all suggesting that, but you have to have all these different qualities. And sometimes things translate, and sometimes things don't. And sometimes it can be as superficial as like somebody's look. You know what I mean? Like if, you know, sometimes somebody has a look in wrestling where it's like almost they have a look that's, and it's not even about like, oh, they're attractive or they're unattractive or they're extremely fit or they're not extremely fit. Like, I mean, it can be those things, but sometimes there's just a presence and like a look that, that a wrestler can have that sometimes can make them, you know what I mean? Almost like elevate them and like get them over some of their other weaknesses. And then, you know, sometimes you have wrestlers who don't have the look, but they're so good, they get past that. And it's just like, it's this whole combination of things is what I'm trying to say. And, you know, it, there's like probably a temptation for a lot of people, like let's say with wrestling, for instance, to be like, oh, well, you know, if the person is like a really great worker, like, you know, nothing else matters. But it does kind of matter just in terms of like how things get over, as you say, in wrestling. And all this is to say that like it's a complicated thing when you're deciding who's going to be in the spotlight, you know, who's going to be the most effective at entertaining somebody or whatever it may be. And so I can really empathize with being stuck in this position where you have to decide like, okay, we're going to cast these actors to play these roles. And, you know, like decisions have to be made in pro wrestling all the time about who's the best person to put in any given spot. You know what I mean? And it's not like you're saying, oh, the person that doesn't get that spot sucks, right? You're not saying that, but at the same time, you kind of have to choose the best talent, the best person, the best overall like performer or whatever in that moment. So I can see that, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And I think it's also like a huge difference when you're talking about like a mainstream audience. If something's targeted towards the mainstream, like there's like, who do you put up front? Cause like what you were saying about like wrestling, like, you know, guys who are just great workers, they can be the biggest, most beloved people in like an indie federation, or like, you know, at like the mid card level of the bigger feds. But like when it comes to like who is the person that you like put the belt on and have as like the face of your company, and who gets the most mic time in the middle of the ring, like that's a different, like, who do you want to be in the commercials? Like, that's a different issue for sure. So,
Yep. So it's complicated. It's, it is what it is, but I mean, I obviously we've seen Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka already, multiple times. So that's sort of a known quantity at this point. And we have talked about that in the past, and I think we'll talk about it more, obviously, when the show comes out. But I am not familiar with Natasha Liu Bordizzo's work at all, but she had a great presence at Celebration. She seemed, I don't know, she just had a lot of charisma and was very likable right away. And in terms of her look, I can see her as Sabine, you know? I can see the... I don't know if resemblance is the right word, but I can just picture her as Sabine pretty easily, you know? So I think all that stuff is good. I'm sure she's a great actor. I haven't really seen her in anything yet, but I was impressed by her. Yeah. But I was impressed by her. So, I also love Tia Sakaar. And I would have been thrilled to see Tia Sakaar walk out there, cause I think she could be great as well. So again, you know, it's hard to speculate about the reasons, and it's hard to know kind of what all led to the decision to recast, or, you know, how they even look at that. Maybe they don't even look at it as recasting. Maybe they look at it differently, but whatever it is, it's hard to know, but I think I would have been thrilled to see her. It's weird because, okay, I don't want to get back into the casting thing really, but I love the cast of Rebels. Like the cast of Rebels is so, especially, and Ezra. Oh my God, I can't believe his name is Taylor Gray. Like I could really see him on in live action as Ezra too, you know? So it's weird, like, especially Tia Sakaar and Ezra, or Taylor Gray, I could totally see them reprising those roles in live action. But anyway, so that was pretty exciting. And here's the thing too. It's like, well, we find out that this actor, Natasha Lou Bordizzo, is playing Sabine. That's exciting. Maybe a little disappointing, you know, for people too, but exciting as well. But it also means, like, at the same time that they made this casting announcement, they basically also made the announcement. They didn't say it, but essentially when you say, oh, here's the actor who's playing Sabine in the Ahsoka show, you're basically telling us, like, guess what? This is Rebels continued. This is, because that's been the speculation, like, what will the Ahsoka show be? Nobody's ever said, as far as I know, from Lucasfilm, Dave Filoni never said, like, oh yeah, totally, we're picking up that thread from the end of Rebels. Like, that's what the show is, right? Nobody's ever said that. But it's been rumored for a long time. But yeah, as soon as they were like, oh, well, this actor is playing Sabine, then it's like my head starts going, oh, so they're confirming right now that that's what this is, you know?
Yep. That, which is, you know, again, it's a very, very controversial thing with, you know, it's just another, another kind of division within the fandom for sure. Cause I mean, I also like when this stuff was even like initially rumored, cause there was the casting rumor, for Sabine months ago. And right then I saw a lot of like, God, I hope that Rebels isn't continued in live action. I hope it's, you know, animated, etc. But you know, we're seeing here that yeah, this is probably going to be the continuation of Rebels. I think they are, you know, but I think Lucasfilm and Filoni in particular always kind of finds a way to like have his cake and eat it too. I bet we'll get the continuation of Rebels in live action, which is obviously what Lucasfilm and Filoni want. I don't think anyone is like, you know, putting a gun to Filoni's head to do this. I think this is probably something he's really passionate about. And this is where his career trajectory is going. Like it should not be like totally surprising. And but I bet they'll also get to have a panel in like 2 years or something where Filoni's like, oh yeah, one more thing. The return of Rebels to animation, and it will be like some side stories or something, or like something that's teased in the Ahsoka show. Like, oh, we're going to tell you what really happened at, you know, when Ezra was with the whales or whatever. Like that's, you know, we're going to tell that story now and it's going to be an animation. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I think people will get served.
I think you're right. Yeah. Okay. So, hey, the footage from the Ahsoka show, looked really good. Again, they're pulling this from 3 weeks of filming, so they have not too much to go on, I guess.
The buildup to the showing the footage, like Dave was like, okay, we've only been filming for 3 weeks. Don't expect much. Like,
yeah,
we don't have anything. Like there's nothing here. We've been filming for 3 weeks and then like showed this like pretty good looking trailer. Like I was expecting like animatics or like a behind the scenes video or like
some blue screen like, everywhere. Yeah.
Like, and then they're like, oh no, here's like this totally complete footage with like costumes, effects, everything is here. Like,
yeah, it looked like $1 million. I mean, that's the thing with the volume, right? I think is like there's probably a lot of shots that like are in camera almost, you know, for the most part or whatever. So it looked really good. There was cool stuff. There was Ahsoka. I don't know if she was at a temple or something, but she was like tracing her fingers along the stone. And, you know, it was very like, because there was no dialogue, if I'm remembering correctly. And it was just very, you know, tone poemy kind of thing, mm-hmm, like you were saying mm-hmm. before, right? Like that's the vibe that it had. And so it seemed kind of contemplative, like the stuff that we saw, a lot of it did. And just, yeah, really great looking footage. There was a shot inside of a ship that I thought was the ghost, but then I was seeing online people were saying, oh no, I'm pretty sure that's not the ghost. So I don't know, but, they also brought Chopper out on stage. That was another way in which they were like, oh yeah, this is basically Rebels returned, right? Like this is definitely Rebels. They brought Chopper out on the stage. But there was a shot
like Hera in that shot.
The shot on one of the ship that looked like the ghost. Maybe it wasn't, maybe it was, I don't know.
Yeah.
We saw Hera from behind. So we didn't see her face, but we saw her from behind, standing next to Sabine, or maybe next to Ahsoka. Next to Ahsoka, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, but we saw her.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. We don't know who's playing her. I've heard rumors of, we know that Mary Elizabeth Winstead is in the show.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if that's who she's playing or not.
That might make sense because she's like, I would say she's like a pretty recognizable, at this point in her career, like, and maybe, you know, maybe concealing that a bit, sense.
And just don't want to give too much away. Like, you know, like they're not even done shooting the show yet. So I think maintaining some, you know, don't show us too much already, you know, cause it's going to be a big moment when people see Hera for the first time, because we didn't even see Sabine. We only saw the back of Sabine's head as well.
Yeah.
And the actor who played Sabine was right out on stage. So
yeah. Which was pretty cool. Like that was a massive pop when they showed the family portrait of the Rebels. And then
I didn't even know what I was looking at first. I mean, I knew that image was from Rebels or whatever, but I was like, I thought that the footage they were showing us had ended. And then they cut to just like a screenshot, you know, like a background of that painting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was so, so cool when like all of a sudden you realize like, oh wait, Sabine is standing there and then she moves and you're like, oh, this is like footage from the show incorporating that exact image from Rebels. Really cool.
And then like immediately after, Dave is like, do you want to meet her? And then brought the actor out on the stage. Like that was cool. That was a cool moment.
Okay. See, my memory is really bad, man. I already forgot about that. I was thinking that they had done all the stuff where they introduced Natasha before the footage.
No, because we didn't know she was going to be in it.
Mm.
That's why it was like, okay. It was such a massive pop. And then Dave's like, do you want to meet her? And then like, just again, explosion of cheers. Like,
no,
it was like
sense,
a perfect celebration moment.
Yeah, that makes sense because Chopper came out beforehand. So it was like already like, okay, yeah, this is a Rebels thing, isn't it? You know, but then show the footage and then Natasha. Yeah. Gotcha. That's cool.
Stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm pretty excited for it. I don't know how you're feeling about Ahsoka, but like after watching that footage and watching the panel and stuff, I'm pretty excited.
Yeah. I mean, it like this, among other things, like also Obi-Wan, got me to restart a Rebels rewatch. I watched all of season one, haven't been a little too busy to jump into season two, probably over the summer. But I would like to do a rewatch, like kind of casually, leading up to, Ahsoka. But I think like, honestly, like a Rebels rewatch, like kind of makes the most sense right now. Cause you've got, you know, the Inquisitors in Obi-Wan, you've got the Darksaber in Mandalorian, and then you have like the Ghost Crew in this Ahsoka show. Like it's kind of like weirdly what a lot of Star Wars is centered around right now.
Yeah.
Which is wild to think of. Cause, you know, thinking back to when we first heard Rebels announced and like, hey, there's a cowboy Jedi played by Freddie Prinze Jr. And we were like, what is this? And then like what it kind of has become and what it's like meant to so many people. Like there is so much Rebels love at Celebration. It is out of control.
You got to wonder what the chances are of seeing Freddie Prinze Jr. on screen as Kanan at some point, you know, flashback or whatever it may be.
Flashback. Yeah.
I don't know. That would be interesting. That'd be pretty cool.
I still cannot stand his little like chin beard thing there. Like the chin beard with like the ponytail, like that'll never be the look. I don't know.
It's funny because I don't mind the look, but I don't really like all that like 90s like grunge rock music too much, you know? Whereas you like that music, but you don't like the look. So
once again, I think you're confusing me with Kevin, the world's biggest Candlebox fan.
Could be. Yeah, could be. All right, cool. Well, should we wrap it up there then, Ryan?
Probably.
All right, cool. So as we said earlier in the show, we will be back soon with more episodes covering other good stuff coming out of Star Wars Celebration, which today's Sunday. So Celebration ended 1 week ago. So it's been a week since Celebration.
Already having withdrawals.
Yeah. We didn't talk about the fact that Celebration 2023 was announced at the closing ceremony for London, mm-hmm. England. And you're thinking about making the trip across the pond, I think. Right, Ryan?
Not if I'm buying a house.
Okay.
That this has all kind of escalated very quickly. I will most likely not be going to London if we're dumping our savings into like down payments and stuff.
Sure. Gotcha. Yeah. I don't think I'll be making that journey either, unfortunately. But I'll look forward to following along from home. But that's a ways away. So that's a ways away. We'll be covering other stuff from Celebration here in future episodes, as well as, of course, talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi, episode 4, part 4, dropping Tuesday morning. So looking forward to that as well. Until then, you can find everything we do at blockaderunnerpodcast.com. And if you want to reach out to us, share your thoughts on any of these announcements, Mandalorian, Ahsoka, Obi-Wan, whatever it may be, you can email the show, blockaderunnerpodcast@gmail.com, or you can follow the show on Twitter @blockaderun, and we'd be happy to hear from you there. And Ryan is on Twitter @VayaMalay,
VayaMalay.
Yeah, so if you feel like chatting about Harry Potter or 90s grunge music, follow Ryan there on Twitter. So
that's what I've built my entire personality on.
That's your brand.
Bush Records and the Chamber of Secrets.
The razor blade suitcase of secrets, I think, is that's what you call your blog, isn't it? The razor blade suitcase of secrets. It's a Harry Potter Bush grunge. All right, we're gonna go now. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back soon with another episode of the Blockade Runner podcast.
We are all the Republic.
I was trying to figure out how to work in some of the lyrics to Glycerine, but I couldn't figure it out.